honor of Father's Day, I'm a dad, and I realized one of the things I always hated were those dad sermons because they always came out the same. Dads have problems. Yeah, I know. I get it. So we're not doing a traditional Father's Day sermon per se, but it will tie in nicely. Just give me a moment. We're going to stay right where we stayed for Mother's Day. Remember, at Mother's Day, the moms were the bears. Well, Father's Day, the dads get to be the frogs. So in our very crowded cage, we are going to add the frog, and we're going to stuff him right over there. By the way, I'd like to give credit. I am not modeling this cage. You notice I stuff them in there, and every single week you come back, and they're like modeled correctly. This is Caleb's job. So he'll take care of that sometime this week. But in our crowded cage, we now have 7 mammals, 2 reptiles, 1 bird, and 1 amphibian. The frog has now been added. And I hope you appreciate how this map lays out. I was explaining this earlier today. If you think about how this map lays out, at the top we have these big predators, and those are the things that attack our life. And then in the middle we had these 4 animals that represented the things that come inside of our life and just kind of work within us. But you know the funny thing is, what people usually see is what's at the bottom. So we might have divisiveness and authenticity issues and speech issues and disconnection issues. But really what happens inside of my life is I become legalistic or I become unforgiving or irresponsible or abuse my liberty. But what people see in my life is a lack of vision, a worldly mindset, and then the last 2 topics that we're going to stuff into the cage. But let me introduce you into the frog. It's mentioned in the Bible in 3 different books. But I just want to let you know something. It ain't on the do not eat list. Isn't that cool? So frog legs are perfectly okay with the Jewish culture. Okay, and by the way, I'm a fan of them too. It is mentioned in 3 different books. It's mentioned in Exodus as part of the plagues, twice in Psalms, recapping the plagues, and then once in the book of Revelation as part of a vision that honestly is another discussion for another day. But if you want to go read the vision, it's in there. And how did they wind up on Father's Day? Well, okay, now I did not create this list. I am going by Animal Planet. Okay, I figure if they're good enough to have a big website and they're good enough to have their own television show, that their facts are pretty good. And so they did this list of nature's best fathers, and the frog finished 2nd. Now, number 1 is the seahorse, and I understand why, because maybe you didn't know this, but the seahorse actually gives birth to its young. I'm glad I'm not a seahorse. Okay? But if you did the seahorse, that would be an aquarium instead of a zoo. So we kind of got to go with number 2, and we're going to go with the frog. And let me just tell you what makes this frog such a very cool kind of dad. They are the primary caregivers once the eggs hatch into tadpoles. Some male frogs keep their tadpoles in their mouth until the tadpoles are able to make it on their own. My kids are so glad we're not frogs right now. As a matter of fact, in the early days when they saw the dads eating the tadpoles, you know what they assumed the dads were? Cannibals. But that's not what's happening. It actually holds them in their mouth, keeping them safe. Other father frogs, such as the midwife toad, implant the tadpoles underneath their skin, usually on their backs or their legs. It gives a whole new idea to letting the kids get underneath your skin. Okay, so they actually take the tadpoles bury under their skin until they're viable, and there they ride until they're able to survive on their own. I sort of feel like that sometimes in my house. The kids are just kind of there. I'm like, out, shoot, go away. One type of frog, aptly called the pouch frog, carries their offspring in a pouch on their front, just like a kangaroo or a possum. So all of these frogs, most people don't realize that mama frog comes along and lays the eggs, and mama frog leaves, and it's really daddy frog that hangs around and makes sure those tadpoles are protected and safe from the predators until they become big enough to be out on their own. So father frog, yeah, he's important. And when we look at the frog, there are a ton of sermons I could have done. Man, we could have done right off of that video I showed you, being green, and we could have talked about jealousy. we could have talked about it's a sticky situation, because while we see them as slimy creatures, most people understand that frogs, they stick. They can climb. They have like little suctiony style feet, and that's why when you have a pet frog, you have to keep them in a slit glass aquarium, because they'll climb themselves out, as we found out when we had one and my son left the top off and we found frog on the steps. It's just he was kind of squished frog at that point. So we could have done this a sticky situation. We could have been hopping instead of hoping, and we could have talked about the idea of hope. We could have done adaptability. We could have talked about how a frog is one of those characters that can survive in any environment you place him in. He's good in the water. He's good out of the water. We could have done another sermon. I did put those up. We could have called it warts and all. I mean, there's a lot of topics we could have discussed with the frog. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, in the future, you can see it coming. There's going to be a frog sermon series somewhere down the road. But today's lesson comes from none of those topics. It actually comes from a fable. When we were looking at the wolf in sheep's clothing, I happened across the fact that Jesus used a fable to convey the idea. It was one of Aesop's fables, which was from the Greek culture. And so I figured if it was good enough for Jesus, maybe I should try doing it. So when I was reading through them, I found this fable and I stored it away, and I'm like, I'm coming back to this. So you're probably not familiar with the fox and the frog and the ox. So let me read the fable as it was written by Aesop. An ox came down to a reedy pool to drink, and as he splashed heavily into the water, he crushed a young frog into the mud. The old frog soon missed the little one and asked his brothers and sisters what had become of him. A great big monster, said one of them, stepped on little brother with one of his huge feet. Big was he, said the old frog. Puffing himself up, was he as big as this? Oh, much bigger, they cried. The frog puffed up a little more. He could not have been bigger than this, he said. But the little frogs all declared the monster was much, much bigger. And the old frog kept puffing himself up more and more and more until all at once he burst. So you get the idea that Aesop was trying to get the point across, that you just can't keep puffing yourself up. By the way, you're not allowed to tie them. But I am going to ask you to keep blowing on them all throughout the sermon. And here's your key word. When I say the words puffed up, I'm going to ask you to add a little air to your balloon. And we're going to see how big we can make them. But be careful. Because if you put too much air into it in the middle of the sermon, you're going to scare some person half to death. Because you're going to pop. So here's the deal. Frogs, in nature, well, they tend to puff themselves up. And the question becomes is, why do they do it? Yeah, I know, some of you are like, I'm never going to get this blown up. That's okay. Okay. Why do they do it? Why do they go about doing this? Well, frogs have one reason, I spelled the word two wrong, but two, frogs have one reason to make themselves bigger. I didn't spell it wrong. They have one reason, and that reason is to make themselves look bigger. Now, why would a frog want to make themselves look bigger? Well, they have one reason, but two purposes. See, their purpose is to make themselves more attractive. It's all about mating. Now, I don't know why female frogs would find a puffed up male frog attractive, but I guess he would. By the way, you can cheat some if you can let it out. You can let a little air out as you go. I don't know why they would find it attractive, but when a male frog is trying to attract a female frog, he inflates this bag inside of him, and he gets bigger. You know what else? He does it out of fear. When a frog is around and there's a predator that's going to eat him, the frog again puffs up and makes himself just a little bit bigger. And you know what he's hoping, don't he? To look bigger so that he does not get eaten. He wants to look more scary. You know the funny thing is? People also puff themselves up. They try to make themselves bigger. And it's not much different. Again, they have a reason. They want to appear bigger than they are. We want people to see us as something that we're not. And our purposes are kind of just like the frog. So we'll be more attractive to people. I like stories, and if you've ever come over to my house, if you've ever gone out to dinner with me, or we've ever sat down and talked for a while, usually if we start telling stories, I can match you story for story. I have had a very eventful life. Okay, I have got a lot of miles on me. Okay, so usually if you have a story, I can have one that comes along with it. But have you ever noticed that sometimes as you go through life, your stories get bigger? You begin to embellish them a little bit. You know, the bus wasn't moving 10 miles an hour, it was moving 50 miles an hour when I jumped off of it. You know, you do things like that because you want people to be attracted to you. And the other thing is we get afraid because we don't want people to see us for who we really are. It's not much different when we decide that we want to be, oh, somebody tied you, Rosalia. You want to be puffed up. So Paul talks about this issue in Colossians chapter 2, verses 16 through 20. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath days. These are shadows of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. Do not let anyone who delights in false humility and the worship of angels disqualify you. Such a person also goes into great detail about what they have seen. They are puffed up. By the way, I experimented how big I can blow this thing before it does pop, okay? I cheated a little bit. I know how big it'll get. Okay, they are puffed up with idle notions by their unspiritual minds. They have lost connection with the head, from whom the whole body is supported and held together by ligaments and sinews and grows as God causes it to grow. So again, we are back with the Apostle Paul, and we are having a discussion. He is writing a letter to a church. And when he writes the letter to the church, this church is in the area of Colossae, and he, like all the other Pauline letters, he is dealing with an issue, and not surprising, he is dealing with people, in his words, that are puffed up. And when we talk about this word puffed up, they are dealing with being puffed up because they're dealing with issues of pride. And that's the issue that I want to begin talking about this morning. Yeah, y'all got to let a little air out. We're going to have lots of pops. We're going to have people jumping all over the place. So we're going to be we'll be having people jumping, kind of like a frog. That might work well. I didn't plan it that way, but if it happens, we'll take it. Okay, so we're dealing about the issue with pride and what it means to have pride. But Paul is talking in a very different slant here, because instead of talking about just pride in general, he is talking about people and how to go about in a church dealing with the issue of pride. See, it's a lot different thinking about being prideful, and now I want to figure out how to deal with the issue of pride. And so he begins with the idea of understanding we get puffed up with our past. And when I say that particular word, it's because, well, Paul starts with the idea about warning about judgment. You see, when I become a prideful person, I become a judgmental person, don't I? When I make myself bigger than I really am, and I look at you and you can't make yourself bigger, then I begin to judge you based on the fact that your life can't live up to my standard. And this is where the root, the little seed of pride, begins to happen. It begins by judging. And as he moves on from judging, he warns them about allowing themselves to be derailed from their mission over meaningless topics. Here's the interesting thing. With the topics that he calls meaningless, what you eat and drink. Oh, well, this ties right back to the idea when we were talking about the abuse of liberty. It isn't important about your eating and your drinking. It isn't about what you serve at your meals. It isn't important about those little minute details. But holidays, he talks about the holidays that are so relevant. How about we get prideful about, well, we celebrate this holiday, we celebrate it this way, or we celebrate it that way, and we get so buried into what we celebrate that we become very prideful and we want to protect our territory. He goes on and he talks about the idea of how we worship can become prideful. How I worship, how I do things, how I sing, what I want to do, all of that, it becomes a matter of pride, and that thing that begins to what? Puff us up just a little bit more. We begin to make ourselves look bigger because those things from our past that we want to hold on to, they begin to feed into our life. And well, Paul calls those things just shadows. Now, God's got an interesting sense of humor because there's no sunshine outside today. so he kind of messed up my object lesson a little bit, but it's okay. I can still talk about it because maybe it's fitting, because when is a shadow out? When there's light. If I take away all the light and I put you in a completely dark room, how many shadows are there? Zero, because shadows are dependent on having the light to make it work. If Paul calls all of these things shadows, they're just there because is a shadow really real? Unless you're Peter Pan, shadows don't do much. I mean, they just kind of go where you go, and they get bigger when the sun gets higher, and they get smaller when the sun goes down, and we have no control over our shadows except for they just mimic what we do. And Paul calls all of these things, the idea of our past, the things that usually we put stock in, he calls them nothing more than prideful shadows. They're things that they get our focus off of what we're here to do, and then they begin to talk about what comes next, because once I start focusing on that, well, we become puffed up with ourselves. Are you starting to worry? Are you worried you're going to get it popped? When we begin to do this with ourselves, Paul indicates some things that let us know that we're getting a little too big, a little too prideful. And he starts off with the idea of false humility. Now, how do I know if I have false humility? You know one thing I found about false humility? People are always trying to tell me or show me how humble they are. Isn't that what we do? I mean, I don't want to be considered prideful. I want to be considered humble. And so since I want to be humble, then I want you to know how humble I am. Thus, I have to tell you how humble I am. And so I go around so hard being humble that then, well, telling you isn't enough. I have to show you. So then I just try to do things just so I will appear humble. And Paul talks about this idea that false humility is nothing but pride. You're actually trying to call attention to yourself. You're actually trying to make your life bigger by making yourself look smaller. You see, humility was what Jesus showed. Of course, how did Jesus show humility? He gave his life. Didn't talk about it. He used his life. He didn't just put it out there. And so Paul talks about this idea that when we begin to allow our life to become prideful, that you know what? We begin to have false humility. And from that, we begin to have misguided worship. Now, misguided worship, what is it that you mean with misguided worship? Well, I come here to worship on Sunday mornings, and I want to ask you a question. Hopefully everybody gets this question right. Who do I come here to worship? Okay? But be honest, who do I usually want the worship service to be about? Me. I want the worship service to be what makes me comfortable in my pond. I want the worship service to be to make what makes me happy. And when I do that, my worship service becomes misguided, because even though I am here to worship God, you know what? I'm trying to make God be happy with the way that I want to worship Him. I am very happy in the fact that the way our worship service goes is 99% of the time it never goes quite as planned. You know, we'll forget something, the slide doesn't get flipped, the note isn't always perfect, it isn't always at the right speed. Sometimes the sermons lay a great big old goose egg. They're never perfect. Because you do understand, your very, very best is nothing more than refrigerator art to God. The best Picasso you could paint is nothing more than something God would hang on His refrigerator. Now, when we were younger, we don't have it as much anymore. My kids stopped doing this. But when we were younger, our refrigerator stayed littered with art. Now, sometimes the art was discernible pictures, and sometimes it was a squiggly line on the paper that I have no idea what it was. But why did I hang it up there? Because it was the best my kids could offer me, and it was always done because they wanted to give me something back. That's worship. And when I become puffed up, I can't worship that way. I get bigger, and I get more attention. And maybe people are afraid of me, or maybe people think I'm attractive, but the reality is that what they see is not the God I'm worshiping. They see the God that I want them to see, because it's really all about me. And then they go into the, Paul goes into the idea of when we look at a prideful person, they go into great detail about their experiences. Now again, this is not about storytelling. I like storytelling, I did. I like to listen to people's stories. I mean, it's one of those things, I love to ask people where they came from and just listen to the details and see where our lives intersect and how they grew up. I just spent the week in Raleigh, and I found out, I told a bunch of people this earlier, I know why our company doesn't have a parking lot up there, a new facility, because I don't think any of those people are old enough to drive. Oh my gosh, I'm like, they must like have snack time. I mean, they're in middle school, right? No, they're not. I've just gotten old, okay? The last of the dinosaurs, I'm ancient, and I look at them like, oh my gosh, they're so young, but they wanted to tell me stories, and then they asked me stories about Lexus, and I'm like, you don't want me to know some of my stories about Lexus. Okay, just enjoy your life like it is. But you understand, sometimes we get so detailed in our experiences, we want everybody to know exactly how we got here. And I want to go out there and explain every detail of my life, not because I'm trying to share God with you. What am I trying to do? Becoming a little more puffed up, aren't I? I'm making my life get bigger. I'm making myself look more attractive by the stories that I'm telling. And then Paul warns against the idea of the church and idol notions. Now, what is an idol notion? Anything that we can't use. That really what it is, right? I mean, if I can't use it, then it really does me no good. We're teaching my son to drive right now, and we've actually graduated all the way to lanes that have dots, and we can now pass cars. We're getting to that point. But I remember the first lesson, we went up there and sat in the car, and he was looking at the little letters, and he said, well, what's the N stand for? I'm like, well, that's neutral. He's like, well, what is neutral? You put it in that, the car doesn't move forward, and it doesn't move backwards. You know what his first question is? Well, what good is that? If the car can't go, what good is that gear? And I told him, well, that's when the car doesn't work. You put it in neutral so you can push it. Okay, that's what it's for. That's why they have a neutral so you can push the car. But you understand, if we have a notion that is not moving us forward, if we have an idea, we have something that is not moving us toward God, but is just holding us right where we are, it's becoming a weight or a noose just to keep our pond the way it is. Paul says that's an idle notion. And interesting enough, idle notions, they puff us up. They begin to make us look bigger and bigger and bigger, because as things stay the same, well, I become more comfortable and I begin to bring more attention. And eventually it talks about an unspiritual mind. You want pop?
No, just wait.
All right. So we get to the point of having an unspiritual mind. Now, what is an unspiritual mind? Well, we get to the point that we really just know or can focus on God. I love the fact that it's almost like we telegraphed that earlier. I understand that, right? Everybody's starting to think more about the balloons than they are about the sermon, aren't they? How big the balloon's getting? Is one right behind me going to pop? How big are we going to have to blow this thing? Do I have enough air before I'm going to pass out? Do you see how distracting this balloon is getting? I mean, it's getting big, and it's getting more attention. But as I'm getting more attention, the problem is you're having a more difficult time paying attention to what I'm saying. You're more focused on listening for the next time I say the magic words and you have to blow into the balloon. So you're no longer interested in the spiritual topic, you're just interested in the balloon. Man, what a cool object lesson. We get to this point where we're so big in our pond and we've blown ourselves up so much and we've made ourselves so prideful that now we have an unspiritual mind and we can't even focus on God Himself. See, this is what Paul was talking about. We think of pride oftentimes as somebody that's just a snob, or maybe they're just not a nice person, or maybe they're just a little self-absorbed. But Paul was talking about how the church becomes a prideful congregation. How the church becomes all puffed up. Yeah, they're wincing now. This is kind of, I couldn't have imagined this working this well. I really couldn't have. So the question begins, what happens about going bust? No, we're not going to do it, okay? Well, I don't know, you can if you want. I'm not going to stop you. But as Paul continues into this particular little passage, he talks about this idea of going bust. And this is what it says. They have lost connection with the head, from whom the whole body is supported and held together by its ligaments and sinews, grows as God causes it to grow. So Paul is talking about a congregation that has blown itself up so much, puffed itself up so much, gotten itself so big and so steeped into its own self that it's actually disconnected from the body, from the head. So now, I want to go back and let's take this back to a little more spiritual conversation. Who's the head of church? Man, I'm so happy if you say Christ. It isn't the minister. It isn't the elders. It isn't the oldest person in the church. It isn't the youngest person in the church. The head of the body of Christ is indeed Christ himself. This was all his idea. And so here's the thing, for those of you who are medical people, even though I can answer this one, what happens to the body that loses connection to its head? It dies. I told you the story about my granny and the chickens and the idea that when she used to wring their necks and she never chopped off their heads unless she hung them to a clothesline, because when you chop off the head of a chicken, it'll flat. That doesn't work with humans. Okay? Any body that becomes decapitated from its head, the body itself ceases to function as it should. So anybody that blows itself up like this and makes itself so big and so focused on what it wants, then we disconnect ourselves from God. And we die. And then you know what happens? The members of the body, the people that make up the congregation, they begin to lose connection to the body. We discussed this over here when we talked about the lion, the process for how people lose disconnection from the body. And so as we begin to lose disconnection from the body, again, we begin to allow our spiritual life to fade away. And eventually we just can't grow. We become so consumed by ourselves, and we have puffed ourselves up so much that we can't grow. We're as big as we can get. And you know what? When we begin to look in the mirror, it becomes a very poor image. Because right now, I can hide behind my balloon. I can hide behind my pride. I can hide behind what I've made myself to be so that nobody can actually see the image of Christ. So here's the question I want to ask you. Are you puffed up? Because you have one of two options. Wow. Trampas, hold that up. Oh my goodness. Trampas is like the master balloon blower over here. Here's the deal about this whole thing. If you find your life in this state and you've got yourself so full of what you think is God that there is no more room, that if I put any more in it, Patty's going to jump a mile in this because all of these things are going to pop. There are two things I can do. I can continue to live a prideful life. I can continue to blow it. And just like the frog in the fable, I'm going to explode, or I have another option. I can let it go. I can let it go. I can let go. Just let them go. That's fine. We'll clean them up later. That's going to be Benji's job. So I can just let them go, and I can let all of those things that I've used to fill my life up, I can let all of the air out of it. And now I want you to see something. Did y'all pay attention to how hard it was to preach that sermon holding an untied balloon? How I had to keep cradling it and protecting it, and how I kept, take a look. I'm free. I'm free. I've released all of the things that I have put into my life that have blown me up to the point that nobody can see who I am, that nobody can see God, because I've made myself so big. And once that's out of the way, now you can see I'm free. I'm free to be the image God wanted me to be. I'm free to live life the way God wanted me to live it. I don't have to have misguided worship, because now I can focus on God, not the balloon. I don't have to have an unspiritual mind, because now I can focus. I'm not focused on how not to keep the balloon popping while trying to keep the air in it, while trying to listen to the sermon, while trying to fill in my blanks, while trying to... You notice how hard that was? It was difficult. And now I'm free. So here's the question. Are you puffed up this morning? Have you put so much into your life that you're stretched to the point that you think one more thing and my balloon is going to pop? One more thing and I'm going to bust. Then let me tell you something. The balloon's not tied because you're still living. So just let go of the balloon. Let go of the past. Let go of yourself. And allow yourself to become the image that God would have us to be. Reconnect yourself to the head of the church. Reconnect yourself to the relationship with Christ. And when you begin to do that, a lot of the issues that we piled up behind this nice little frog, look, they don't mean anything much anymore, do they? They're just flat and done.